Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy your company, and we appreciate all the great stuff you're doing for the community. Hey, this program is sponsored in part by the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra Members Association and the Fairfax Education Association. We appreciate their support. Joining me today by phone, we have Joan Walsh from The Nation. Joan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Charles.
Always a pleasure. We appreciate it. Joan, you were recently part of an article talking about Democrats winning back blue-collar working whites to the party. What's your take on that? Is it possible, or is it something that the Democrats should just forget about?
Well, I don't think we can forget about working class whites. They've really become a swing group of voters, and I think we can reach some of them. I think we can do better, but I also worry, as a lot of people do, that we are sometimes we downplay the role of race and racial bias and racial anxiety, which is maybe less than bias and maybe something we can deal with. In the decision by many of them to go for Donald Trump. Now, I was trying to write all along during the election that on the national level, at least, these working class whites left the Democrats, or a majority of them did. I don't want to say all. But they began leaving the Democrats after 1964 and Lyndon Johnson's embrace of the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, and other measures to deal with the legacy of slavery and racism, and then also to try to maybe close some of the gaps with education funding and job programs for teens in America's cities. It became, I think that rattled a lot of working class white Democrats, especially in the South, but also in the North. And so, Hillary Clinton didn't do that much badly, that much worse than, say, George McGovern did in 72. There's a long line where Democrats really struggled. Bill Clinton did relatively well, but he really emphasized reaching out to that group. Jimmy Carter did better because he was in some ways, well, not part of that group, because he was a farmer, he was a business owner, but a Southerner with a common touch. Barack Obama slid from the Clinton level, but did better than people expected, partly in 08 because of the financial crisis that we had. Mm-hmm. And Clinton did do worse than Obama. Some people look at that and say, hey, that means racism. It's not about racism, because some of these same white voters, maybe 12% of Obama voters flipped to Trump by estimates that I've seen and consider reliable. Well, how can they be racist if they once voted for a black president? But, as you know, racism isn't quite that simple or black and white, as shall we say.
Right.
We had never had a candidate like Donald Trump, who was so willing to push the buttons of fear, resentment, racial anxiety, a sense that, immigrants are coming here and taking jobs from white Americans or, murdering or raping them. There was a real campaign of fear and demonization that we hadn't seen before. So
right. It was shock jock radio.
Exactly.
Into politics. And I have to, wonder. Clearly, Hillary Clinton had better ideas, better solutions for the problems that impact, let's say, coal miners in West Virginia and southwestern Pennsylvania. But at the same time, President Trump, then candidate Trump, was talking about, well, I'm going to open up new coal mines and I'm going to open up new steel mills.
And these things are not going to happen. They can't happen. It's not just environmentalism that doomed coal or steel. It's the world economy and the fact that it's they're both mined cheaper and processed cheaper in other countries. So she got tagged with the label anti-coal because in a very long speech that was actually about how we have to help people dislocated by the end, you know, the withering of the coal industry, we have to help them. She did say, there was a half sentence saying, we're going to do away with a lot of coal jobs. We're going to put a lot of coal miners out of work. And even though that sentence was attached to, and therefore this is what we must do, it just sounded like, you know, some horrible Marie Antoinette bragging that she was going to put coal miners out of work. If you said it over and over on the shock jock radio shows, right, on the right-wing radio shows, and didn't play the whole context. She's got a whole – I did read the book, and I actually liked it and thought it was better than I expected, actually. She's got a whole chapter on that misunderstanding and what she would have done. And it's kind of heartbreaking because, you know, the media didn't help her get her message out either.
Yeah, exactly. Now, let me ask you this. I mean, are we seeing coal miners in West Virginia, steel workers in southwestern Pennsylvania coming to the realization that, no, Donald Trump is not going to help me get a job? Despite the 75 new jobs that they're picking up in coal, it's going to be used for something else, not for energy.
Are we starting
to see people coming to the realization that, oh, you know, that Affordable Care Act was my health care that Donald Trump's trying to get rid of? Are people starting to come around to understand that there was a whole bunch of kabuki and lies and Russian collaboration going on with that campaign and are changing their mind?
Well, yes. You know, to some extent, they are changing their mind, even among, you know, the group that approves of him the most, you know, and was most enthusiastic. Their numbers have slid a little bit.
Right.
People like to say that, oh, he's holding on to his base. And he is holding on to his base, but that doesn't mean that he hasn't lost, you know, maybe 10 or 15% of it. So even those hardcore Trump supporters are feeling disillusioned, but not, you know, not that many of them. But perhaps enough to, you know, give a Democrat a real shot. I mean, in 2020.
Has Donald Trump also, at the same time he's losing a percentage of his base and he's probably down around 25%, there's a whole bunch of people that did not participate in the last election for whatever reason. Are they now saying to themselves, oh, wow, that was a mistake too?
I hope so. I'm not seeing. I mean, I hear that anecdotally. I've talked to some of those people myself, so I'm hoping that's more of a larger conversion. But I actually think, Charles, that that's where we should be paying the most attention. I mean, I think we should put forward, the Democrats should be the party of workers, and that means white workers as well as workers of color. I think that, a lot of the policies that are needed to strengthen unions and create jobs via, you know, massive infrastructure, all these things will help, you know, not just workers of color, but certainly help white workers. I think the Affordable Care Act has helped white workers, whether they know it and like it or not. And we are seeing some recognition of that in the backlash to repealing the ACA. So I think that we've got to get smarter, though, about figuring out who those voters were who did not come out. I mean, we don't do a great job any year, but, you know, the years of Barack Obama, we had much higher turnout. I mean, Donald Trump won Pennsylvania and Michigan by getting less votes than Mitt Romney got. You know, it was just that the overall electorate was so suppressed.
Right.
Some of that is voter suppression. Some of it is they're not getting our message. They're not moved by a sense of urgency. And I think that's what I would like to see a lot of party leaders and party organizers.
Joan, let me ask you, as a communicator, is this a communications issue? Is this a matter of getting out there and having the conversations, or is it something else?
I think it's an everything issue. You know, I just don't think we have been as present in our community. You know, well, I live in New York. Democrats are present here. But, you know, in some of the left-behind Rust Belt cities, I don't, you know, I think that the right has a network of organizations from the NRA to the evangelical churches that they work through, and we don't have that kind of soft infrastructure, let alone, you know, the whole roster of Koch brothers affinity groups. So I think Democrats have to get back down on the ground and you know, stand up and be counted and, you know, figure out how to be present in some of these communities that have turned red over the last 10 years. But I do think it's a messaging issue. You know, one thing that was interesting in the Hillary Clinton book is that she, you know, you hear people saying she doesn't take any blame, which is crazy. They just didn't read the book. But one thing she actually gives Bernie Sanders credit for is making her see that even if we can't get to single payer or Medicare for all, to take one example, if that's our goal, we've got to put it out there. We've got to start describing the programs and the organization and the community of the future, the values, our values for the future, for this changing country, in much broader sweeping turns than, you know, I'm going to do this little add-on to the Affordable Care Act and we'll have a little public option over here and, you know, debt-free college but not tuition-free college. And, you know, I think that she did. I'm not saying that's why she lost, but I think that's why she probably lost the messaging war and the war for young voters to Sanders. And I think that's an important lesson for the party. We really need to speak in deeper resonant tones about our values and how we come together. I was going to say stay together. I don't know. You know, people kind of mocked her slogan, Stronger Together, but I thought it was a great slogan because that's fundamental to our values. We're stronger when we pull together. You know, Paul Wellstone used to say we all do better when we all do better. You know, those are the fundamental values, and they were repudiated by Donald Trump, but you know, only because of the perfidy of an electoral college that favors small rural states and I think really disenfranchises urban voters, to be honest.
Joan, we are out of time. I want to thank you very much for being with us today. Hopefully we can get you to come back on and talk about it some more. How do we find out more about you and what you do?
I am a writer at The Nation, so you can go to thenation.com. I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle is just Joan Walsh, all one word. And I'm on MSNBC a couple times a week. So
there you go.
I'm around.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.